content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. Our first article was published by the Associated Press on September 5 and written by Nicole Winfield and Saral Enbold, entitled, Pope Gives Noble Chinese People a Shout-Out at Mass in Mongolia in Bid to Warm Ties. Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. Pope Francis sent a special greeting to China's noble people on September 3, giving them a special shout-out at the end of a Mass celebrated in the neighboring Mongolia, during the first ever papal visit that was largely overshadowed by Beijing and its crackdown on religious minorities. Francis brought up to the altar the retired and current bishops of Hong Kong, Cardinal John Hung Tong and Cardinal-elect Stephen Chow, clasped their hands and told the crowd that included many mainland Chinese pilgrims that he wished them all well. I want to take advantage of their presence to send a warm greeting to the noble Chinese people, Francis said. To all the Chinese people, I wish the best and to always go forward, always progress. I ask Chinese Catholics to be good Christians and good citizens, he added. To cheers from the crowd in the steppe arena and the capital, Ulaanbaatar. It was the first and only time that Francis has publicly mentioned China during his four-day visit, despite the large shadow that Beijing has cast over the trip and Mongolia. China's ruling Communist Party has been waging a years-long, sweeping crackdown on religion, tightening controls, especially on Christianity and Islam, that are viewed as foreign imports and potential challengers to Communist authority. The crackdown targeting Uyghurs in the northwestern Xinjiang region have been especially fierce, with claims that more than 1 million ethnic minority members were forcibly sent to prison-like re-education centers, where many have said they were tortured, sexually assaulted, and forced to abandon their language and religion. The UN last year accused China of serious human rights violations that may amount to crimes against humanity. China has denied targeting Uyghurs and others for their religion and culture, denouncing the accusations as lies by the West and saying its crackdown was aimed at quashing separatism, terrorism, and religious extremism. The Pope did send a telegram of greeting to President Xi Jinping as his aircraft flew early Friday through Chinese airspace, offering him divine blessings of unity and peace. The Beijing Foreign Ministry acknowledged the gesture and said it showed friendliness and goodwill. But while small groups of Chinese pilgrims attended Francis's main mass here, no mainland Chinese bishop was believed to have been given permission to travel for the papal visit to Mongolia. Their absence underscored the tenuousness of a 2018 Vatican-China accord over Catholic bishop nominations, which Beijing has violated by making appointments unilaterally. Early Sunday, China's crackdown on faith groups was indirectly apparent, as Francis highlighted, by contrast, Mongolia's long tradition of religious tolerance. He presided over an interfaith event with Mongolian shamans, Buddhist monks, Muslim, Jewish, Shinto leaders, and a Russian Orthodox priest. Sitting among them on a theater stage, Francis listened intently as the faith leaders described their beliefs, their relationship with heaven, and the peace and harmony their faiths bring the world. Several said the traditional Mongolian ger, or round-shaped yurt, was a potent symbol of harmony with the divine, a warm place of family unity, open to the heavens, where strangers are welcome. The fact that we are meeting together in one place already sends a message. It shows that the religious traditions, for all their distinctiveness and diversity, have impressive potential for the benefit of society as a whole, Francis said. If the leaders of nations were to choose the path of encounter and dialogue with others, it would be a decisive contribution to ending the conflicts continuing to afflict so many of the world's peoples, he said. Francis is in Mongolia to minister to one of the world's smallest and newest Catholic communities and highlight Mongolia's tradition of tolerance in a region where the Holy See's relations with neighboring China and Russia are often strained. Beijing's crackdown on religious minorities has been a constant backdrop to the trip, even though the Vatican hopes to focus attention instead on Mongolia and its 1,450 Catholics. Hong Kong Cardinal-elect Chow, who made a historic visit to Beijing earlier this year, accompanied 40 pilgrims to Mongolia. He declined to discuss the absence of his mainland Chinese counterparts, focusing instead on the importance of Francis' visit to Mongolia for the Asian church. I think the Asian church is also a growing church, not as fast as Africa. Africa is growing fast, but the Asian church also has a very important role to play now in the universal church, he told reporters. Chinese President Xi has demanded that Catholicism and all other religions adhere strictly to party directives and undergo sinicization. In the vast Xinjiang region that has led to the demolition of an unknown number of mosques, but in most cases it has meant the removal of domes, minarets, and exterior crosses from churches. We really hope that gradually our government and leaders will accept him and invite him to visit our country, said Yan Xiong, a Chinese Catholic businessman in Mongolia who attended an event on Saturday with Francis at the city's cathedral. That would be the most joyful thing for us. Most Mongolians follow the dominant Gelapa school of Tibetan Buddhism and revere its leader, the Dalai Lama. As a result, many Mongolians are concerned with the Communist Party's opposition to the exiled Tibetan leader and its heavy-handed control over monastic life, and what appears to be a concerted effort to gradually eliminate Tibetan culture. Yet, given the need to maintain stable relations with Beijing, China is Mongolia's top export partner. The country's leaders have not spoken out on the matter, just as they have remained largely silent about repressive linguistic and cultural policies toward their ethnic brethren in China's Inner Mongolia region. Francis also has largely avoided antagonizing Beijing, most significantly by dodging any criticism of Beijing or by meeting with the Dalai Lama. While the Dalai Lama wasn't present Sunday, he was mentioned by the head of Mongolia's main Tibetan Buddhist monastery. The abbot noted that His Holiness, as the Dalai Lama is known, had recently recognized the 10th reincarnation of the head Lama of Mongolian Buddhist. This is an extraordinary fortune for us, said the abbot. The recognition has posed a problem, given that China requires all reincarnated lamas to be born within China and be officially certified by Beijing. The newly recognized Mongolian Lama meets neither criterion. Now an article published by the Associated Press on August 30 and written by Maria Teresa Hernandez. Alumni grieve for Jesuit-run university seized by Nicaraguan government that transformed their lives. Mexico City. Long before it was confiscated by President Daniel Ortega's government in mid-August, the Jesuit-run University of Central America in Nicaragua was a special place for thousands whose minds and lives it transformed. The university was the only center of independent thought left in the country, said Juan Diego Barbarina, a lawyer who fled to Costa Rica. He studied at the institution, known as UCA, between 2014 and 2017. Ortega's government described the university as a center of terrorism and seized its property, buildings, and bank accounts on August 16. A week later, the Jesuit religious order was declared illegal and all of its assets were confiscated. A new institution would replace UCA, though further details are still unclear. This is a government policy that systematically violates human rights and appears to be aimed at consolidating a totalitarian state, the Society of Jesus of Central America said in a statement. Since December 2021, at least 26 Nicaraguan universities have been closed in a similar manner. UCA's closure responds to the position it took during protests in 2018 to be on the side of the people who were suffering repression and demanding substantial changes, Barbarina said. Founded by Jesuits in 1960, UCA had historically rejected authoritarianism and offered support for students committed to fighting for deep social transformations. The revolution, 1979 to 1990, cannot be explained without universities, UCA included, said Daisy Zamora, a poet and former vice minister of culture who currently lives in the United States. She became a student at UCA in 1967. Zamora recalls that even after receiving her primary education in a religious school, UCA expanded her social vocation and political awareness. Eager to fight for her country and overthrow Anastasio Somoza's dictatorship, she and fellow classmates joined a student branch of the Sandinista National Liberation Front, which ended the Somoza dynasty in 1979 and established a revolutionary government. The Jesuits were very open to students expressing themselves politically, Zamora said. UCA was a hotbed where resistance actions against the dictatorship were being developed. It was like a small republic where students exercised democracy. 4 decades later, in 2018, UCA became a hub for protests against Ortega, and its rector participated in peace talks that eventually failed. The recent confiscation of the university, which enrolled more than 8,000 students, follows a series of increasingly authoritarian actions by the government against the Catholic Church and opposition figures. A human rights organization, Nicaragua Nunca Más, estimates that more than 50 religious leaders have fled in the last 5 years. In 2022, two congregations of nuns were expelled, and in February, an outspoken critic of Ortega's government, Bishop Rolando Alvarez, was sentenced to 26 years in prison. A month later, the Vatican closed its embassy after Nicaragua proposed suspending diplomatic relations. When I found out about the closure of UCA, I started crying, said Maria Gomez, a journalist who fled to Spain. She graduated with a communications degree in 2017. She first heard about UCA at age 11, and becoming a student was her lifelong dream. When she got in with a full scholarship, she was overcome with joy. I couldn't pay the tuition, despite the fact that it was cheap, about $2 or $3, but for a family with limited resources, that was a lot of money. In 2018, she joined protests in which peasants and former students demanded government action to stop the burning of an environmental reserve. We felt safe because the teachers didn't interfere, but they gave us freedom to create banners, to gather, and even protected us, Gomez said. When the police began to attack the demonstrators, they opened the gates of UCA for us. Some of my professors, who were Jesuits, approached refugees in the cathedral and other universities to pray, to bless them, she added. And they told us, "You are the future of this country. Do not be discouraged." UCA's influence on youth went beyond its classrooms. Ernesto Medina, a past student and former rector at the National Autonomous University of Nicaragua, in the city of Lyon, said that colleagues from UCA changed the way he thought about his own Christianity more than 50 years ago. I had social concerns, but they were traditional ones that Catholic schools instilled in us, said Medina, who now lives in Germany. We would go to a poor neighborhood to distribute food, clothes, to talk to people. But the comrades from Managua seriously questioned the dictatorship and the need for a special social transformation. According to Medina, the 1970s were decisive for his country. The military stopped attempts to develop guerrilla groups inspired by the Cuban Revolution in the mountains. Therefore, the Sandinista National Liberation Front penetrated urban areas. UCA played a crucial role back then because a generation of boys were influenced by the Jesuits of the time, Medina said. What mobilized the majority of the Nicaraguan population was a combination of Christian ideas that were highly committed to the people and revolutionary ideas that ended up prevailing. For retired military member Roberto Samcam, who served as a major in the Sandinista Popular Army and became an engineer at UCA in the 1970s, the university is woven into the fabric of Nicaraguan society. Ortega himself spent a few months as a student at UCA before devoting himself to the revolution. And in an event that now seems ironic, the university granted him an honorary doctorate for his contribution to peace and democracy after accepting an electoral defeat in 1990. He came back to power in 2007 and has governed Nicaragua ever since. What he's stealing is more than a campus, more than university degrees, Samcam said. Other former students agree. Barbarina fears for the fate of the Institute of History of Nicaragua and Central America, which was housed by UCA and is considered the main documentation and memory center in the country. Gomez worries the press clippings that documented the revolution, which she read endlessly during her spare time at UCA, might be lost. For me, it was the only university that taught students how to become critical and respect each other, Gomez said. And by losing that, we lose everything. Our last article was published by the Religion News Service on September 5 and is entitled, Giving is Up at Churches and People Are Back, but Clergy Are Still Thinking About Quitting, by Bob Smetana. 3 years after the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, churches have fewer people in the pews, more money in the collection plate, and less conflict than they had in 2020. Despite their struggles, many congregations are optimistic about the future. Clergy dissatisfaction, on the other hand, remains on the rise. Those are among the findings of the latest report from the Hartford Institute for Religion Research, part of a 5-year study of the impact of the pandemic on America's churches. This latest report drew from surveys for 4,809 congregations from 58 denominational groups, including an oversampling of 20 denominations, as part of the Exploring the Pandemic Impact on Congregations study. The surveys were fielded from January to May of 2023. It is apparent that congregational dynamics are still in a state of flux, said Scott Thumma, director of the study. Churches, and especially clergy, continue in a recovery phase. Even though aspects of church life are rebounding, the destiny of many faith communities is still uncertain. The median attendance at local congregations stood at 60 people as of spring 2023, down slightly from 65 in the spring of 2020, according to the report, a decline of 9%. About a third, 30% of churches said they'd experienced significant decline, while a quarter, 24%, experienced some decline. 12% stayed the same, while 11% said they'd experienced some growth. One in four congregations, 22%, had experienced significant growth. That pattern, half of churches reporting decline while a third reported growth, is similar to the pattern at the beginning of the pandemic, according to the report. Researchers also found that 16% of worship attendees were new people in 2023, up from 5% in 2020. A number of people also continued to attend services online, an average of about 25 people, according to the congregations that track their online attendance. About half of congregations do so, with the median attendance of 75 overall, including online and in person. Congregations remain optimistic about the future, but it is also apparent they are continuing to wrestle with the troubling conditions that were in existence long before COVID-19 arrived, the report's researchers wrote. Giving at congregations went up about 42% over the past 3 years, from a median of $120,000 in 2020 to $170,000 in 2023. Even after adjusting for inflation, this still represents a remarkable increase of over 25% since 2020, according to the report. Online giving appears to have played a role in boosting donations. Congregations that offer online giving reported higher per capita giving, ranging from $2,052 at the congregations where online giving is used to $2,428 where online giving is used a lot. Congregations that do not offer online giving options reported per capita giving of $1,809. The report noted that only 31% of churches reported using online giving in 2015, whereas now 67% do so, and nearly half, 48%, use this method a lot. Researchers suspect that capital campaigns and other fundraising projects that were postponed in 2020 may have been started in 2023, boosting the giving. Despite the boost from online donors, the return to in-person worship appears to play a role in increased giving. In congregations where there are more virtual worshipers than in-person worshipers, the median per capita giving was $1,053. In congregations where most of the attendees are in person and few are virtual, giving was $2,479 per capita. Whatever the reasons for the rise, it will be interesting to watch this trend in future surveys, researchers wrote. This is especially true since the growth in income did not translate into a significantly more positive assessment of the congregation's financial health compared to their self-perception of 5 years earlier. Giving to religious groups, including congregations and other faith-based charities, grew by 5.2% in 2022, according to the Giving USA report. Those donations made up about a quarter, 27%, of all giving to charity, and religion was the only sector in the Giving USA report where giving went up. While online worship persists, other forms of activities such as youth programs, adult education, and prayer groups that were held online during the pandemic are now mostly in person. Half of churches are not holding any small groups or Bible studies online. 40% do not use online platforms for their administrative and committee meetings, and 40% have no e-newsletter, according to the report. In other findings, volunteerism is bouncing back, with congregations reporting that a third, 35%, of their members volunteer regularly, up from 15% in 2021 and 20% in 2022. That number, however, does not match the 45% who volunteered in 2020. Conflict at congregations has also declined, with 7% reporting that conflict was so serious that clergy left, 9% saying people withheld funds due to conflict, and 30% saying people left due to serious conflict. In 2020, 12% of congregations reported that clergy left due to conflict, 13% said people withheld funds due to conflict, and 35% said people left. 33% said there was no serious conflict in 2023, up from 36% in 2020, while 32% said there was conflict, but it was not serious. Almost half of the congregations, 45%, said they were very positive about the future, while a third, 36%, were somewhat positive. 9% were somewhat negative, and only 2% said they were very negative. However, the percentage of clergy who have thought about leaving both their church and the ministry altogether has risen since 2020. In 2021, most clergy in the survey, 79%, said they had never thought about leaving their current church, while 13% said they thought often about leaving. In 2023, the number who never thought about leaving had dropped to 62%, while 29% said they thought about it often. As for leaving the ministry altogether, two-thirds of clergy, 62%, said in 2021 that they had never thought about doing so, while 27% said they thought about it often. In 2023, 49% said they had never thought about leaving, while a third, 34%, have thought about it often. Congregations also have less enthusiasm for change 3 years after the start of the pandemic. In the summer of 2021, 86% of congregations said they were willing to embrace change in order to meet their challenges. Researchers said congregations appear to be hopeful that they can face the challenges ahead of them, but those challenges are significant. Amid these positive signs remain some structural and organizational challenges that indicate all is not entirely rosy, even given the rebounding attendance and level of optimism. The broad pattern of considerable membership decline remains ever present. We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.